The well-known singer, Kenny Rogers, passed away just a few weeks ago. Way back in 1979, Kenny Rogers put out a song which told the story of a struggling singer who was having almost no success at all. The song told of how he had promised his mate that he could change the world with his songs. And the song is about him coming to the conclusion that that was simply not going to happen, but that she continues to believe in him. The chorus of the song says, "She believes in me. I'll never know just what she sees in me. I told her someday if she was my girl, I could change the world with my little songs. I was wrong. But she has faith in me, and so I go on trying faithfully. And who knows, maybe on some special night, if my song is right, I will find a way." The song is about this singer's attempt to accomplish something and his doubts about his ability to do so. But more than that, the song is about his faithful mate who struggled and endured because she continues to believe in him. And so he expresses doubts about himself, "I'll never know just what she sees in me," and he marvels that she continues to believe in him. And that's the title of the song, "She Believes in Me." There is no way to measure the influence that is had on another human being when somebody believes in them. Only a few weeks ago, we talked about the need to choose our words carefully when we talk to others. We talked about the need to recognize the power that our words have to heal or to hurt someone. I want to explore this concept again, but from a different angle. It really does make a difference what we say. The words that come out of our mouths can encourage and edify, and the words that come out of our mouths can damage and destroy. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21 says that death and life are in the power of the tongue. People have lived lives filled with depression for lack of encouraging words from others, because no one believed in them. And people have changed their lives and accomplished great things because of one kind word of encouragement spoken by someone, because one person believed in them. "Flatter me and I may not believe you. Criticize me and I may not listen to you. But encourage me and I'll never forget you." Do we lift people up? Do we make them glad they were around us? Do we help them see the good in themselves? Do we make them better for having been around us? These are good questions, and it's extremely important for us to be the kind of people who see and try to encourage the best in others. But knowing that some person believes in us, knowing that some person has confidence in us, complete confidence in us, can take us only so far. How much more meaningful is it to know and to believe, to be fully confident that God believes in you? To know that the God of all creation has every confidence that though you often fail miserably, though many times you've made a mess of things, that God knows your heart. God knows that you want to do better. And God has full confidence that you can do better and that you can be better. Better than you believe you can. We look at ourselves and often we see only our flaws. We see our mistakes and our failures, our shortcomings. We often engage in negative self-talk, which is that little voice in your head that criticizes you and tells you that you're dumb and all kinds of other things like that. That you simply can't do it. But God looks at you through eyes of grace and love, and He knows and He sees the real you, the you who at your core wants to do right, wants to be right, wants to live right. God believes in you. At the beginning of the 12th chapter of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, after the writer concluded a long list of people who had faced the trials that life brought them, and these people had been faithful to God, the writer of Hebrews then says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out before us. The picture is that of each one of us running in a great race, and the writer says that the stadium is filled with people who are looking at us. They are looking not to criticize. They are looking not to cast doubt. But every one of these witnesses is looking at you and testifying that you can do it. You can be victorious in this race. They are saying, by God's grace we endured. We were victorious. We did it. And you can do it too. Perhaps you've heard the old joke about the nun and the atheist. The atheist says, I don't believe in God. And the nun replies, but God believes in you. You know, it's not surprising that men should believe in God. But it is shocking, however, that God should believe in us. But one of the unshakable tenets of the love that he has for us is that he really believes that we have the capacity to be what we should be, to become the kind of people who he wants us to become. He believes in you. Remember Job? When people first read the book of Job, many people would conclude that God dealt very harshly with Job, that God was mean to Job, maybe even cruel. But the book is actually a testament to the fact that God believed in Job. When God asked Satan in chapter 1, verses 8 through 11, have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. Then Satan replied in verse 9, does Job rather fear God for nothing? Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hands so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But now stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. Satan's saying, you've got him in a jacuzzi. You've protected him from every kind of difficulty. What else would he do? And God said, he's in your hands. You put him to the test. But why would God put his servant to the test? Unless he believed that Job would pass it. Why would God put Job to the test unless it would somehow strengthen and benefit Job to pass through it? Why would God put Job to the test unless God believed in Job? Here's what we've got to know about it. Job had a hard time, and there were moments when Job cried out to God against the injustice of his experience as he saw it. But God believed in Job, and though Job was tested severely, in chapter 16, verse 19, Job said, my witness is in heaven. My advocate is on high. Job is saying there is someone there who knows who I am. There is someone there who knows what I am capable of. Someone who knows what my intentions are. Someone who knows me. You know, we face the same kind of problem today. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 tells us that Satan goes about as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. And it tells us that we ought to be vigilant. We need to be watchful. Satan has the power to devour us. Satan does not believe in us. He is the one who casts the doubt. He is the one who always doubts the possibilities of our lives. He's the one who would whisper in our ears to convince us that eventually we are going to be utter failures, that there's nothing decent about us, that we are always devious, that we are always dishonest, that we are always serving our own interests, that there is nothing that's honorable, nothing true about us, and that there is no good principle that we believe in that we would not give up if it would cost us too much. Satan says anybody will do anything to save his own skin. But God looks at the whole of humanity in this way, and he says about mankind in general, there is good in these people. He says there is the possibility for greatness in these people. And we sometimes forget what it does to the souls of men who've made all kinds of blunders, who've gotten their lives in terrible twists. We sometimes have forgotten what it does to them to hear somebody say in a very dramatic and powerful way, I believe in you, and I am expecting great things from you. Our Creator believes in us. The Father has committed great tasks to us, tasks that will make a difference, tasks that will make a difference in our lives and in the lives of others. The Lord has the confidence that we have the courage and the integrity to fulfill these tasks. We often focus on our failures, and so we often see ourselves as failures. But that doesn't mean we are a failure in God's eyes. It reminds me of Jesus when he said to Peter in Luke chapter 22, verses 31 through 32, on the occasion of the evening before his crucifixion, when Jesus told Peter that Satan has asked for you, but I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And Jesus knew when he said that. Jesus knew that Peter was going to deny him three times, saying, I don't know the man. Jesus knew Peter was going to swear with an oath that he didn't even know Jesus. He knew that Peter was going to turn his back on him. But Jesus said, when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. What a statement of confidence. A statement of confidence that Peter was going to need later on when he awoke to what he had done, when the rooster crowed. We need to know about this confidence. Jesus believed in Peter. As fickle, as vacillating, as impetuous as Peter was, Jesus believed in him. And he believes in you. And though we might not think of it this way, but Jesus' death on the cross is his way of saying to us, I believe in you. He believed in us enough to make himself vulnerable to the most awful kind of abuse. He suffered an agony that even a wicked man should not have to suffer. But what Jesus is saying to us in dying this way is, I believe that it will count for something. I believe that you will be touched by it. I believe it will make a difference in your lives. I don't believe you can be hard enough. I don't believe you can be stubborn enough. I don't believe you can be mindless enough to look at this and not know that I love you and that I care and not know that I believe in you. I know it says more than that, but sometimes we miss the fact that it does say that. You know what a difference it makes when somebody comes to you in a time when you feel absolutely despondent about yourself. You feel like you've been an absolute failure, and your life just seems to stretch out in blackness before you. And somebody says to you, I know that you may not have done well this time, but I also know that's not who you are. That's not what you're really made of, and I don't really believe that's the course that you are going to take. What I believe about you is that you not only have the capacity for greatness and goodness, but I believe there is something in you that longs towards that direction. That what you are truly is an individual who wants to do right. And when that person tells you that, you tend to reach down into yourself and say, I will try again. I will do better. Because somebody believes I can, I will. And more than anyone else, Jesus, the Son of God, who emptied himself for our sake, is saying that to us. I believe you want to do right. He's saying that to you, and he's saying that to me. All of us have despaired of ourselves. We've all disappointed ourselves so many times, but God doesn't believe that's the way it's going to turn out. He knows you have it in you to do the right thing. He's made this investment with the confidence that you will see and understand and be touched by his love and turn to him. The Savior gave his life for you, and he believes in you. Just as God believed in Job, Just as Jesus believed in Peter, God believes in you, Jesus believes in you. They believe that you want to do right and that you want to go to heaven. Keep that in mind when you get discouraged and get up and try again. When you're discouraged and have fallen back and you've drawn back and have lost confidence in yourself, remember that His confidence in you is that even though you may fall, that you are going to make the correction, you are going to correct your course, you are going to do the right thing. In Genesis chapter 22, the text makes it clear that God had confidence in Abraham. Otherwise, He would not have told Abraham to sacrifice his own son. God believed in Abraham. That's why God put him to the test. If you love someone, you don't put them through that kind of test unless you're confident they'll be made better by the test, and you don't put them through that kind of test unless you believe in them. God even expressed confidence in Cain. In Genesis chapter 4, verses 2 through 7, we read, "Abel kept flocks and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord, and Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from the soil, from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering He did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it.'" God was not taunting Cain. God believed, God knew that Cain had the capability to make the right choice. Otherwise, God was merely being cruel. You don't try to really convince third graders that they can dunk a 10-foot basketball goal. Come on, try harder. You can do it. That's what God would have been doing if Cain had no choice in the matter. That's what God would have been doing if Cain was incapable of doing the right thing. But He said, if you do what is right, will you not be accepted? And He talks about sin desiring to rule over Cain, but He says, you must rule over it. How cruel, unless God really meant it. All of us know what it feels like to have people not believe in you. It makes you feel weak. It makes you feel unconfident. It makes you not believe in yourself. It makes you not believe in your own goodness, your own desire to do better. And hopefully every one of us knows what it feels like to have someone who does believe in you, to have someone express confidence in you, confidence that you want to do better, confidence that you want to do right, confidence that you can do better, that you can do right. Psalm 115, verse 16 says, "The highest heavens belong to the Lord, but the earth He has given to man." Psalm 8, verses 4 and 6 says, "What is man that you are mindful of him? You made him ruler over the works of your hands." As in the song I mentioned earlier, we often express doubts about ourselves and we marvel at the thought that God believes in us. Have you ever thought about the confidence that God expressed in mankind when God just turned the earth over to man and said, "Here it is. Do with it what you will"? You might say it was a reckless gamble, but I say it was a bold display of love and trust. It was an act of confidence. It was God saying, "I believe in you." And look at what man has done, how he has used the resources of this rock floating around in orbit. God believes in you, and God longs for you. This is another surprising announcement in the gospel. Despite all our mistakes and foolishness, our Father longs for us. He waits by the gate for us to come home so He can clothe us in a tuxedo or a formal gown and throw a feast for us. The reason some people have trouble trusting is that they don't see God with outstretched arms. They see God with clenched fists. They are focused on fearing His punishment. These people need to focus more on the good news of His grace. They need to hear how much their Father loves them, how much their Father believes in them, and how much their Father longs for them. Everything that God has ever done testifies to His love for us. The ultimate expression of His love was the cross. He did it all because He loves us and because He believes in us and because He's not willing that any of us should perish. His enduring hope is that we will stop doubting His love and His confidence that He has for us and in us. And when that happens, when we stand firm in the confidence of our Father's love, and when we become convinced that God believes in us, then life truly begins.